The IRS is back in business, baby. As of mid-June, the IRS is sending out a flood of notices of final intent to levy. Hello, my name is Jim Wade. I'm a tax attorney here in Maine, and welcome to Tax Resolution Talk. In this episode, we're going to be discussing what to do if you get one of these notices of final intent to levy. If you got some letter or other correspondence from the IRS, and it talks about garnishing your wages or seizing money in your bank, then you may have received one of these notices. And just like a rattlesnake, if you receive something like that, you can hear the little ch-ch-ch-ch of the tail. This is a warning. You need to take action now. If you're not sure, look up into the upper right-hand corner. You'll see, it should say LT11, CP90, or CP91 if you're someone who collects Social Security. There may be some other notices out there. Oftentimes, the IRS has a series of other notices that are used for other reasons. Let's say you have a business, they may have another CP notice that says the same exact thing I'm discussing, but maybe with a different number. So just be aware. Notice of final intent to levy. If you go to the second page and there's talk of your rights to a collection due process hearing, if you see it says CAP, Collection Appeals Program, this is not the same thing. If it says CDP, Collection Due Process Hearing, then you got a problem. That means you have typically 30 days to act to request a hearing. Otherwise, the IRS is going to take action against you, whether it's garnish your wages or seize money in your bank account. If you're self-employed, they may even seize money that's owed you by your clients. I know a lot of self-employed people, they try to be a little cute. They keep very little in their bank account, deal mostly in cash, or maybe even with prepaid debit cards. Well, I've seen the IRS at least a couple times here in Maine, and Maine's not a large state, where people have come to me and said, hey, the IRS has sent notices to my customers saying pay them and not pay me. So whether you're self-employed, have a wage, or you're retiree with money in the bank, there is a reason to be worried about one of these notices. Now, you can do a couple of different things. I mentioned this collection due process hearing. We'll get to that in a moment. Most of the time, if you don't owe a lot of money and you just need to set up a payment plan, call the IRS up, set something up, and then that will be a bar against collection against you. You'll make your payments as you agree, and the IRS will, as part of this payment plan, agree not to levy your bank account or garnish your wages. But if, let's say, you need time to get something worked out with the IRS, well, then you want to request a collection due process hearing. Because what that's going to do, if you request it within those 30 days, will be an absolute bar against, well, I shouldn't say absolute bar, sorry. It is almost an absolute bar against collection against you. There are certain circumstances where the IRS, even if you request a collection due process hearing, the IRS can collect against you, but typically there's some sort of bad behavior on your part. Let's say you're an employer and you're not paying your payroll taxes and you request a collection due process hearing, the IRS can seek to collect against you regardless of that, you know, request for a CDP hearing. If you're doing something like that, bad employer, don't do it, stop it. The IRS hates payroll tax pyramiders, so you're looking at potential criminal penalties, but that's another episode for another time. But for everybody else, if you need more time, a collection due process hearing will stop any levies, give you a chance to work out a payment plan. You can request hardship status, maybe even submit an offer in compromise, that IRS debt settlement that you hear about all the time. And it'll go up to an IRS appeals officer, typically someone who's experienced in IRS collections. This is often a good thing if you've got a complicated case. Just throwing things out there as examples, let's say you're going through a divorce and things haven't settled as far as who's going to get what, what your income is going to be, what your expenses are going to be once the divorce is finalized. I find that IRS appeals tends to have more experience in dealing with these things and are willing to give you more time to, you know, develop all the facts, set up a payment arrangement or some other resolution. If you're calling up the IRS on the phone, they call it ACS. The people there tend to be less experienced. They don't have a lot of time. It just is not as easy to work out, you know, a payment arrangement. But doing the CDP hearing will give you a chance to talk to someone. Now, you, like I said, you've only got 30 days to do that. If you miss the 30 days, then the IRS can act, whether it be seize bank funds or garnish your wages. But you can still request a hearing. It's called an equivalent hearing. The difference between a CDP hearing and an equivalent hearing is if, let's say, we go up to IRS appeals on a CDP hearing and the IRS doesn't agree with whatever we offer up as a plan, we can go to United States Tax Court. We can take it up one more level. Well, with an equivalent hearing, you can't take that appeal. Generally, with the IRS, 99% of the time, it's going to get resolved. So really, you just need that one hearing to get it done. But that's the difference between the two. For people who have older tax debts, this is sort of an asterisk as to which one you should use. If you're someone who has a tax debt that's sort of getting towards the end of the 10-year collection statute with the IRS, by requesting a CDP hearing, it will toll it, meaning extend the 10 years, whereas an equivalent hearing will not. In an equivalent, the IRS can still take collection action against you. Oftentimes, the IRS does not. It thinks that, my personal opinion is the IRS doesn't do it because they want you to take advantage of these hearings to get something worked out. If they were to sort of try to take action against you, then why would you do it? Because there'd be no benefit. So just keep that in mind. CDP hearing, bar to collection, can take it to U.S. Tax Court, but it does toll the 10-year IRS, you know, collection statute. Equivalent hearing, you can request it from the past 30 days, so you can do it from the next 11 months after that first 30 days. So if you consider the notice as a start of a 12-month sort of time clock, first month, collection due process, next 11 months, you can do an equivalent hearing for that particular year. Oftentimes, the IRS will send out, you know, these notices of final intent to levy for 1 year or for a series of years. So that gives you the right to a particular year or set of years. All right. Sorry to add a little bit more of complicated stuff in there, but just be aware that there are circumstances where you might get a CDP hearing for a particular year or for a series of years. Make sure you know that because you might have other years that are not covered, at which point the IRS can take collection action against those years. Let's say if you had a previous CDP hearing or you got a notice of final intent to levy for that particular year and didn't exercise those hearing rights. So just kind of keep these things in mind. So let's just do a quick summary because I might have thrown a lot at you. If you get one of these notices of intent to levy, look at the second page. You have should have language about a collection due process hearing. If you do, like I said, that's like a rattlesnake tail going. This is your warning. If you don't do something, the IRS may take action against you. What can you do? Well, if you've got a small matter, you can just call the IRS and work something out. That should give you protection against that levy. If you've got something more complicated, then you want to request that hearing, that CDP hearing within those first 30 days, or an equivalent hearing for the following 11 months. An equivalent hearing isn't as good because you don't get sort of absolute protection against a levy, but it may be in certain cases better than nothing. If you're someone who has multiple years of taxes owed, just look at the notices to see which years are covered. If you've got a year that's owed that's not in that notice, then that particular year, the IRS can still take action against you, just not for the years that are listed on the notice. So that's sort of in big summary of everything. Now, what options do you have to take care of it? I already mentioned a couple of them, but let's just go in a little bit more detail. Payment plans are the most common way to resolve it. A lot of people are thinking about settling their tax debts. 99% of the time, it's not going to be that. Many people think they qualify, but they don't want you to crunch the numbers. The IRS does not settle like a used car salesman. You know, you don't just sit there looking at a car talking about, well, it's got a scratch there. Why don't we take, you know, $1,000 off? And, you know, it doesn't work like that. They look at your assets, they look at your income and expenses, and then figure out what might be a potential settlement. So for most people, hey, it's some sort of payment plan. Depending on how much you owe, you may be able to walk into a streamlined plan, meaning you don't have to provide any financial information so long as the payments are going to fully pay the tax debt by the end of this 10-year collection statute that the IRS has. That's typically how it's going to be worked out. Now, there are opportunities outside of a payment plan to reduce what you owe either through penalty abatement or if maybe the IRS has calculated your tax wrongly, you might be able to amend a return and get it reduced. If you've got an issue of liability, you disagree with how much is owed, you may be able to work that out either contemporaneously or afterwards. But just keep that in mind. Payment plans generally are how things are worked out, but you can find ways to reduce that balance. You could also do what they call a partial pay installment agreement. That is the same thing as a payment plan. It's just that the amount that you're going to pay in based on your ability to pay is not going to be able to fully pay off the tax debt by the end of that collection statute end date, that 10 years. You do have to get managerial approval at the IRS. You've got to do a full-blown financial information statement. So you've got to essentially show all your cards. But if it works out, it's kind of like an offer and compromise. An offer and compromise is essentially paying less than what you owe to settle it all. Here it's you pay less than what you owe and the rest is sort of written off. Another option is hardship status. So if you owe the IRS, but you know, taking into account what you make for income and what you need to pay out for necessary living expenses, you're not going to have enough to pay your current tax liability and your current living expenses, then you could qualify for hardship status. If you've got other assets out there that could pay the taxes, they may take that into account and deny you hardship status. For example, you have a home with equity. Oftentimes in that situation, if you can show that you can't borrow against the equity, then you may still qualify for hardship status. This oftentimes works best for low to middle income people. If you're someone who makes a lot of money, you just are in a short-term bind, it is harder because oftentimes you have other assets that you can sell or borrow against to pay the IRS. You won't qualify for it. Then we got the offer and compromise, that debt settlement. These are, if they work, they work fantastic. What you have to do in these cases is look at what you have for assets and what you're making for income and what you have for expenses, because there's two components to it. There's your equity and assets, and there are special ways to calculate what that's going to be. And then they look at what your net monthly household income is. That's your income, gross income, less all your expenses as allowed by the IRS. It's not what you actually pay. It's what the IRS allows. And the IRS has statistical amounts that they have for people who live in various parts of the United States. So if you live in Boston, you may have higher allowable expenses than if you lived in Montana, out in the boondocks. But they look at that, and if you have an excess amount, then that amount's going to be used to calculate your offer amount. You can pay it either in 5 payments, or you can pay it over as many as 24 payments. So that is there as an option to you. So those are the big four. The fifth one is bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is an option. Many people hate the idea of it, despise it, curse it, refuse to look at it, but it is an option. Oftentimes, what it allows you to do is kick the problem out of the IRS and into a federal bankruptcy court, which, you know, is not as sympathetic to the IRS position as it is to your position. Federal bankruptcy courts tend to be looking towards the interest of the debtors to try to get a sort of complete fresh start for the debtor. There are rules as to what tax debts are dischargeable, meaning can be sort of legally extinguished in bankruptcy. But if yours qualify, it could be a fantastic option. All right. So if you get one of these notices saying the IRS intends to levy against you, again, it's like a rattlesnake. It's a warning. It means you need to do something about it. Don't ignore it. So if you've got something where you just need to call up the IRS, set up a payment plan, do it. That way you can avoid a levy action against you. If it's more complicated, then seriously consider doing a request for a collection due process hearing, whether it be the full-blown or the equivalent. What you want to do is do something. One word of warning. I often will hear this advice given to people. When they get this notice of intent to levy, you'll hear people say, oh, just take the money out of your account so the IRS can't levy it. Or move assets into other people's names, quit your job, do things like that. Just be aware, tax evasion isn't necessarily for people who lie on their tax returns. There is what they call tax evasion related to collection of taxes. So if you're hiding assets, if you're dealing primarily in cash, if you're buying these prepaid debit cards, you're moving assets around to avoid IRS collections, these might be affirmative acts of tax evasion. I don't say this to scare you. Many people are not thinking that they're engaging in tax evasion. They're concerned they're going to have the money, you know, not have the money to pay rent, you know, pay for food, put gas in the tank, things like that. But just be aware, if you're going to do something like that, you're putting yourself at risk. A better option, instead of trying to hide assets or take other steps to avoid, you know, being impacted by this levy, it's get a hold of the IRS and get something worked out. If you need help in working out an arrangement with the IRS because you're not sure how you're going to do it, you can always talk to myself or other tax professionals. My number is 207-502-7181, or you can email me at jwade@jdwadelaw.com. Don't worry, that information is in the show notes. I'll also have links to examples of these notices that you'll receive from the IRS so that you can look at them and see if it matches yours. And with that, thank you for listening and have a great day.